It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Welcome to Firearm Friday. I am your host, Chris Dover, and this week we're going to be talking with Keith from EAA about Tangfolio, Gerson, and the entire lineup of firearms that EAA imports.
But first, I want to take a minute and talk about Sportsman's Guide. Now, Sportsman's Guide has been around a very long time and is the leader when it comes to assisting you with your outdoor-related hobbies. They are going to have what you need. Be sure to check out their Buyers Club membership, which will save you even more on the products you need with discounts and free shipping. Check them out over at sportsmansguide.com.
All right, crew, help me welcome Keith to the show this week. Keith is from EAA. How are you, Keith?
Hello, my name is Keith Bernkrant. I'm the president of EAA, and we've been in the importing business a little over 30 years now.
Wow.
I've been around for a while, and I am third generation in the small arms business in the U.S., and my son works with me now, so there's a fourth generation coming up.
That's pretty interesting. So how did all that get started? How did that lineage get started?
Many, 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 many years ago, my grandfather had a grocery store in New York and then would come down south and for the winters. He would come for a short time. Mm-hmm. And he was actually bringing guns, I guess, back and forth. Eventually, they opened a retail shop, they opened the distribution, and that's how he started. And then my father joined into the family business later in his life. I worked with the family a very short time, then went on my own. And I've been in business on my own for over 30 years now.
Gotcha. Now I'm guessing when your grandfather, when he started his, that was pre-1968 legislation,
sure. Right? That was a long, long time
ago. Long time ago. Right. Right. Because that's where, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the import, I think a lot of what you guys have to deal with probably comes out of that 1968 legislation, doesn't it?
Yeah. 68 Gun Control Act changed a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you've got enhancements or whatever you want to call them to the legislation over the years, and, rules and so forth that have come along over.
Right. Now, is being an importer, is that something that as far as the regulations and legislations and licensing and the other things, is that something that has to be kept up with on a regular basis, like compliance and fees and things like that?
Yeah, we have all the same things, all the audits and everything from ATF, GTB, so forth. Mm-hmm. It's just every 3 years, you know, they look at our records and they do all their things, you know. Even because we import, we're part of a customs program called CTPAT, and they keep an eye on us too. You know, customs keeps an eye on us. They've been to our suppliers over the years. So we get quite a lot of regulation.
I'm sure that could be a little hectic from time to time.
If you treat them correct and they treat you correct, it seems to be it's fine. It's when,
right, yeah.
The two of us get at odds or something is when the relationship can get a little broken.
Yeah, as long as you're not, you know, trying to cover up something or hide something, right? As long as you don't have a reason to work.
I think you follow the rules, and if you find out you made a mistake, let them know, and a lot of times I've had them try to help, you know, when we found out, you know, license expired or something and we have something moving, and, you know, ATF has helped us get a license. Customs is, even during this crazy time we're in right now, had a shipment stuck in an airport or something, you know, customs has helped to try to move it along. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty good relationship with them.
That's good. It's great to hear. Yeah. Now, with with being an importer, you deal with, you know, multiple other companies. I'm sure you probably get calls almost every day of the week by some firearms manufacturer somewhere in the world, right? Wanting you to carry their product or import their product.
Yeah, we get a lot of people. I mean, from my time in the business, we started importing from Tamfolio in Italy and Wyrock in Germany. Then we went to Spain and imported Astra Star. We've imported some guns out of from other Italian manufacturers. Then I spent 15 years of my life working with the Russians. We imported a lot of guns from Baikal and Ishmash. Mm-hmm. And now we're working with Tamfolio still, Wyrock still. And then we work with Gersan out of Turkey, and we work with Akar out of Turkey. And we're building their products and making them more for U.S. taste. And it seems mm-hmm. to be working pretty good.
Right. Now, when a company like that approaches you to import their stuff, are there compliance factors they have to meet as far as the regulations go, or is that something because you bring them in as an importer, is that something you deal with, or EAA, I should say, not you personally, but EAA has to deal with all of the compliance. Does it, once they get you as an importer, does that exempt them at all?
No, we, so what happens is the firearm will have to get a ATF's blessing, whether it's a handgun or a long gun, and the ATF will issue an import license. If they've not seen the firearm before, then they 99% of the time will ask to see the firearm for them to run what's called a points. If, especially if it's a handgun, they'll check it to make sure it has the required points. Mm-hmm. Long guns, they can say like an over and under, send us a picture, and they can bypass that. It depends on the person at ATF at that time.
Right.
Then you have, for us, since we're part of the customs program after 9/11, they actually have every 3 years go and audit our suppliers. And they mm-hmm. audit our suppliers for the product moving to the United States. And they stay up on that. I mean, it surprises me sometimes that they want to go as often as they do to the suppliers. So we have the compliance at ATF and the compliance at customs.
Wow. And so when you talk about getting the import license, that's per firearm. So if a model changes the slightest little bit, is that a new?
No, ATF, they have a points criteria.
Okay.
Now, if you went in and deleted a safety, removed adjustable sights. And again, it depends on the fire, you know,
right.
You have a points criteria, and pretty much before we import a gun, I'll calculate the points and make sure it has the points. If it doesn't have the points, we'll change the configuration if necessary.
Gotcha.
Or we even do what's called a conditional with ATF. So we try to submit to ATF in a configuration that will pass.
Gotcha.
So then you have that. And once you've gone through that, then internal to us, once we get the gun in, we'll run the gun through an evaluation with us. We'll run endurance tests. We'll swap parts. We'll do a lot of different things, making sure that, you know, if there's 10 guns, they're similar, that they hold up, that they will work for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
We pride ourselves on trying to be a good value for the dollar. We may not have the prettiest firearms all the time, but they usually work.
Right. So sounds like y'all have a pretty rigorous testing method before you accept anything for importation.
We definitely burn some ammo.
Right. Right. So, you know, there's several, when you talk about the brands that are out there, and I know probably when people hear EAA, probably Tangfolio is the first one that comes to mind. And as we get into some of the products and other things here, just for folks out there that are viewing or listening, you're more than welcome to follow along, EAAcorp.com. and kind of follow along as Keith and I are talking about some of the products and things here. But I know for me, when I hear EAA, and like you said, you've got some of the other brands too, but you know, Tangfolio is just the one. So is that your staple as far as what you guys deal the most in?
I would say that's not the case today. That's okay. Related to the market. So You're in this market right now where you're having a lot of people wanting firearms that have, a lot of them have never owned a firearm. They want it for protection. So in that case, you're going to sell a lot more, not low cost, but reasonably priced firearms. And so Gerson and Akar are doing a much better business than Tangfolio. Tangfolio is a much higher priced gun. To me, Tangfolio is someone that is familiar with firearms and wants to move up. They want to get a Volkswagen, and now they want to get a Audi. And that's kind of like Tangfolio would be the upper level. And the Volkswagen, you would have the Gersons of the world and the car. Though Gerson is making some 1911s now that probably could stand up against the big boys. We have guys competing with a 1911 that out of the box is, it's quite amazing for the value.
Yeah, I've noticed on one of the things with Tangfolio that I've yet to lay hands on one, so that's why I was going to ask you about that. And that was the little bullpup.
The Rimfire 22 long rifle or 22 mag, the Appeal.
Mm-hmm, the Appeal, right.
We've been selling those for probably 5 years.
Wow.
It's a very good gun. It was designed by a guy in Italy that's worked for most of the big names in the U.S. even, and the Italian manufacturers. This was his design. It's a very nice gun. It's totally ambidextrous. He did his homework. Negative on the gun, it doesn't accept a large capacity magazine. In Rimfire, most people want a high capacity magazine. That comes into the importing laws. We're capacity restrained at 10 rounds.
Wow.
Had the designer chose like a Ruger 10/22 mag or something instead of a proprietary mag, that gun would be a runaway bestseller.
So they do have the option when you're talking about the point system and stuff of designing it where it, in other words, this one could accept if they did a redesign. You don't think there would be an importation issue with that?
No, because it's approved on its as imported.
Gotcha.
We couldn't sell a high capacity magazine. But if the gun accepted a magazine from an aftermarket manufacturer, there's not much that will happen.
Right. That's a totally separate thing than the importation process, is what you're saying.
It is an interesting point, is putting that high capacity magazine in a gun that's approved. You are in the process of violating the law because you're not deviating from the way the gun was approved for importation. And then you get into some other regulations that the gun's supposed to be re-identified and so forth. But if you have a gun that accepts a common magazine, it's pretty hard for ATF to reach out to that level.
Right. I just find it amazing how, when you're talking about, especially that one, when you're talking about the regulations you have to comply with and how, well, it does apply here, and then it doesn't apply if you make this, you was to make this change, but then it can apply. It's like, where's the black and white sometimes, right? Do you have a team of lawyers there with EAA that sorts all this out for you?
It used to be that everything was black and white. There were people at ATF that really didn't deviate. In the last years, you have people at ATF that are, I would say they're, they understand a little bit more, and they interpret things a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But today it's not so black and white. today, if I'm in question of whether this gun will make points, even though ATF may have issued me an import license, I might ask them just to look at the gun.
Right.
Because it's a different world for them.
Sure. Yeah, just to be double sure.
Yep.
Just to hedge your bets. No, I understand.
If now it's a basic revolver, that's a simple, you know, that's a different thing. But mm-hmm. When you get into stuff where you're not sure, to me, it's better to ask them to take a look.
Yeah, some people say it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission or something like that.
I don't
run that way either. I'd rather know my limitations and know what I can and can't do than take a gamble. And especially when you're dealing with federal regulations and stuff like that, because that's no joke. They could come down on you like a sack of hammers if you screw up. And I know you've got way too much time, especially and money on top of that invested in all this.
Yeah.
With getting back to the different brands and then the overall talking about, you know, EAA, which is the importer, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Do you find that people, I know that I deal with this, especially with Tankfolio. Now, the witness is Tankfolio, correct?
That's correct.
And I find a lot of people out there call that the EAA witness, not the Tankfolio witness. Do you find that people interchange those names sometimes?
You do. We have stayed with the name witness in the United States, and then we have all different configurations. You know, they're all still the same gun underneath. They're just the different configurations, disciplines it's being used for, competition it's being used for. I think it's sometimes it might be confusing because we use the same name, but in other times people know the name witness, they say, oh, it's a witness, and then they're okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So it's just a matter of the market, I guess, correct?
Yeah. Right now, your market is very price conscious for the bulk of what's being sold. So your high-end Tankfolios are not very slow right
now. Mm-hmm. Now, with since we're on Tankfolio and we're on the witness here, you do have several compact versions of that witness available too. So before and maybe even during some of this crazy, I don't know. Are y'all any type of a significant portion of the concealed carry market with the smaller frame witness?
We truly don't have a concealed carry gun.
Mm-hmm.
The smallest we have is what's called a Tankfolio. And they used to call it subcompact,
mm-hmm.
but I don't even know if it truly is because it's in 9mm. I think it's 13 rounds.
So okay.
It's a fairly good sized gun.
Okay. What about the Pavona?
The Pavonas we did, and that was in 380 or 9mm.
Mm-hmm.
And those went over. We did that for women, kind of redesigned the cocking mechanism and how it was cut to make it easier to function. It did okay for a while when that market was running hard, but then that market kind of changed.
Mm-hmm.
Had I taken those design changes that we did on the Pavona and put them into any of these little 380s that are out there today, we could have run real hard because it was a little bit bigger. The Pavona was a little bit bigger than someone would want to carry in their purse.
Okay, I got you. Now, as far as the more match grade Tankfolios that you guys bring in, and a lot of those are, you know, the cost is understandable in them. As you read through, and again, I encourage folks out there to check out the website, look at some of the specs on these firearms we're talking about. But you're talking about custom shop stuff that. Here in the States would, to me anyway, equate to something like, oh, good Lord, a Langdon Tactical or a Wilson Combat or, you know, one of those high-end boutique shops. Is that is that what you're finding with the higher end competition stuff with Tangfolio? Is that it is true custom shop quality?
Yeah, Tangfolio is a good, better, best. And that's pretty much the way we've always run that business. We have an entry level Tangfolio that's either steel or polymer. Then we go up to a better, which will be an entry level competition area. And then we go to best, which is extreme. Mm-hmm. The customer can start with a basic gun and they can buy all the parts from us to change that into an entry level competition gun. I don't know whether they can take it all the way to the highest level without a customer.
Right.
But Tangfolio is one of the few guns that you could buy a gun in 9mm and you could make the gun 10mm, 38 super, 45, whatever you want to do. You can even put a 22 conversion on it. And it's all out of the box. I mean, we have all the parts to allow you to make the gun single action, double action, ammo safeties, whatever you want to do with it. Mm-hmm. Tangfolio is probably one of its best features is its versatility.
When you get into
the high-end stuff, they're kind of, then the gun is custom built by hand for a certain discipline.
Right.
It'll still be converted because we have all the parts, but it would be a shame to convert that gun because everything was hand fit when it was built. When you get to an extreme level gun.
Right.
Top shooters in the world all have used them for it. I mean, in all two world shoots ago, we were first, second, and third, and couple different places in the world shoot. Tangfolio, most people who compete at the highest level have used Tangfolio at one time or another.
Yeah, I know quite a few competitors here, you know, in the U.S. that use the Tangfolio stuff seems to really, really popular. And yeah, what you're talking about worldwide, I spoke with some, what was it? Yes, PSA maybe is what it was. Competitors from South Africa about a year ago had them on the podcast, and that's what they ran because oddly enough, in different countries, we take for granted sometimes here in the U.S. what we can have and what we can get imported and that sort of stuff. And there they can't, for example, in South Africa, they can't even get something as simple here as a Ruger 10/22. They can't get in South Africa. And so it's really weird what firearms they can and can't get a hold of. But Tangfolio was one of the most popular there because it was able to be imported. So with the competition market here, about how long has Tangfolio, has it been pretty much since you guys started importing them, or do you know about how long Tangfolio has been used for competitions actually here in the U.S.?
It's pretty much since we started importing. Mm-hmm. They were very crude in the beginning, and they're a different machine today. In the beginning, the shooter ended up doing a lot of the work himself, customizing and fitting parts and doing things themselves. Mm-hmm. Today you can get it out of the box.
Right. And have you seen over the years, have you seen a growth of people, competition shooters in the U.S. moving to Tangfolio?
It goes up and down.
Oh, does it? Okay.
It goes up and down.
You've got new things that come out, right? And everybody has to try the new thing, I think, sometimes to get that bug.
So some years were up in competition in your guns, and some years, you know, we're not. Some years, you know, there may be a gun with three bells and whistles on it that everybody wants to shoot that year.
Right.
Pretty much when you talk to a lot of the competition shooters that have shot Tangfolio, they'll tell you they shot pretty well with that gun.
Right. Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that it's more with Tangfolio, it's more of a consistently over the years, it's been a performer, let's say, in the competition market.
Yes.
So let's shift gears. I know we talked on the phone a little bit yesterday, and we talked about Gerson. I definitely want to get into to some of those for sure, because I was not aware of that company. And I think it was SHOT Show last year. We were at the range day and I stopped by the booth, and one of my favorite handguns of all time, as far as just the design, the aesthetic, the looks, is the Beretta 92. And I own quite a few of those, as well as the Taurus versions. And they're set what looked to be a Beretta 92, but it was the Gerson, and was able to shoot that, and a very, very cool pistol. If you like a 92, that's pretty much what that is. But again, I wasn't familiar with Gerson. So how long has Gerson actually been being imported into the U.S.?
So Gerson, we took on 2 years ago.
Okay.
The gentleman that runs Gerson and myself have known each other for many years. We were supposed to import him, take over his line about 10 years ago. And another gentleman, and it's right after the United States started all the tariffs and embargoes and all that on the Russian products. So we were supposed to take over Gerson. And in the meantime, another manufacturer in Turkey came to me and said, Keith, if you'll handle my line, this is what I could sell you the product for. It was too good to be true. So I accepted it. Later on, it turned out that there were some other factors there. So Gerson and I saw each other over the years, the shows and so forth. And then 2 years ago, we got to talking. And I said, if you'll follow and work with me, we could do pretty well. And I didn't have that type of response since I had Baikal in Russia. Baikal was a similar situation. They let me direct them to what to make. Mm-hmm. And we did very well with Baikal till it was sanctioned and shut down. Gerson has followed what we said and has been very positive to make the changes to make the gun more for U.S. taste. So your 92, they were making the 92 when the United States carried the 92. Turkish military carried it. And so they were making it for the Turkish military, for their forestry services, for the police departments and so forth, because we as the NATO member carried it, so Turkey did.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we changed away from the 92, now Turkey has gone into their own version of what they want to carry. But this factory still had built for military, had the quality controls and everything necessary. So we worked with that factory. We now have what we call the Regard, which we have in a basic blue or dark earth color or two-tone. And then we make the gun a little bit better by adding G10 grips, threaded barrel, a little bit nicer finish. We have an engraved inversion. And we are bringing out now, the first ones enter the country 2 weeks from now, the first production, what we call the Gen 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Regard, but with most of the changes that you would find on a custom shop Beretta.
Wow.
So we brought it out at a very competitive price. We did the G10 grip. We added a window in the grip and a window in the magazine. We did the nicer trigger, nicer hammer, nicer controls, what you see in like the Beretta Brigadier, and we did it for a lot less money. And it's the gun came out. It's one of the nicer projects that we have coming online. And they start shipping in 2 weeks from now. They come into the country. It's a hell of a value. When you see the gun and you... if you had a Beretta and you had this next to it, you would say, I understand. Even the safety, where a traditional 92 decocks but doesn't rebound, the safety rebounds. The trigger breaks nicer. The double action is nicer. Everything about the gun is just, even the grip has the finger rests in the grip, and we continued those finger rest into the actual G10 grill. Came out very nice. That project just getting ready to start.
So what I'm hearing is it's going to be a Beretta 92 custom shop at a similar MSRP to just a entry level Beretta or even cheaper, correct?
Yep. It's when you get it, you're going to say, wow. Anybody that I've, because we had a couple samples we carried to SHOT, and then I carried to the Harrisburg, the NRA Harrisburg show, and I've carried to a couple distributor shows, and people just said, wow, that's the response.
Right. And, you know, sometimes it's just the little things, and it's hard to swallow that sometimes, but when you just talk about the addition of the G10 grips, that can be such a game changer, because people out there, they're looking at these things in their local, you know, gun shops, they're looking at these things at the online retailers and other places. And for them, for a lot of people, it's an aesthetic thing, right? It's something that catches their eye. So do you find that something is as small of a change as those G10 grips make a world of difference?
They make a difference, but in that G10 grip is a window with a clear Lexan plate inserted, and in the magazine is a window cut. So from your grip, you can see your capacitor.
Wow.
And that's standard. The front sight is dovetailed where normal 92 wasn't. Just a lot of little things that we did to the gun that when you see it, you'll say, wow.
Right. Now with Gerson, I mean, we didn't want to gloss over a couple of the other things, because they also do, and who doesn't, I think, at this point, but they do a 1911 style as well, correct?
We started with their 1911. I moved it to 99% interchangeable with the standard government 1911 and screw, threads, everything. And then we started going good, better, best. We started with a basic 1911, and we have a 1911 that's government, commander, or officer. Mm-hmm. And then we started with the G10 grips. We started with the windows, the G10 grips. We started with the beggar, extended beaver tail, the ambo safeties, nicer trigger, because originally the triggers were very rough. We just started doing all those changes. Mm-hmm. And today we have, in the full size, we have the standard 1911. We call it MC1911S. And then we have what we call a match elite. And then we just brought out the Noel. The Noel was a gun we gave one of the matches, two of the matches, to a shooter last year. And I said, break it, change it, do whatever you want to do, and then report to me when you're through. And that shooter gave us all the changes he did. And we took a lot of those changes into production. It is a gun that has a lot of features that you would find on a custom shop gun costing a couple $1,000s for about, I think, retail $700-$800, something like that.
And wow.
It has a lot of features on it. And we just brought those guns and actually gave them to the shooter that helped us. And he came back and, you know, he wants some more tweaking, but tweaking was very minimal compared to what it was when we started. Mm-hmm. 1911s, that's a full size. A commander, we just did the G10s. We have on full size commander or officer the option of optics. And on officer is where we went in and we made a gun called the Ultimate. We melted the frame, the slide, had adjustable sights and a G10 grip with the window in the magazine. Ambo safeties, big beaver tail, 9mm 45. Gun came out nice. I mean, mm-hmm. When you see the gun, it's a wow. And you would spend, to get a custom gun like that out of some of the big names, you would spend three times as much as you pay for an Ultimate.
Sure.
He even does the frames, you know, forged aluminum, fully machined, and the 9mm. And the officer size, he did his homework, and then we just tweaked it to the United States base.
Right.
And they've been very successful with their 1911s. There's even some articles recently by some of the writers that say, wow, you know, they just say this is a hell of a value for the money.
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes back into what you had mentioned earlier about, you'd said Gerson working with you. And I don't know if that's a normal thing with, the relationship between, an international, let's say, and that, I wouldn't think that it would be. I think that the most common thing is they produce something and they just want somebody to import it. They're not necessarily looking for the input. But with the input that you're giving them, I'm curious, what are some of the things that, we could talk about this with the 92 or the 1911s here, just whichever particular model comes to mind, but what are some of the things that are popular maybe in a U.S. market, as far as the little changes that are not internationally?
So I'm going to go to a shotgun. Mm-hmm. Gerson had a copy of the M2 and they had it there. They had brought it from other importers in the U.S. They didn't do that well. And they had a gun sitting there in their facility that shot 3.5 inch, 3 inch, and 2 3/4. And I said, I want that gun. And they said, why would you want this gun? I said, because Americans always want bigger, better. Mm-hmm. I said, with 3.5 inch, 3 inch, 2 3/4, we address all the requirements for a U.S. hunter who uses 12 gauge. Mm-hmm. We took that gun and then we started to tweak it. We changed the mag tube thread to 870 mag tube thread. Mm. We camouflaged the gun with camouflage that is more of U.S. taste. Mm-hmm. And we made a hunting version of the gun. We make it black camo. Then this year we brought out what's called the Gobbler, and that's been like a runaway success. We put the Picatinny rail into the receiver. Instead of taking a rail and screwing it on top like everybody else, which is much cheaper to do, we machine the receiver. We machine the Picatinny rail into the receiver. We also enhance the loading port. We also put larger controls. So for a turkey hunter, they now can choose between pistol grip or standard stock. And then the gun has all the normal features. It has the enhanced loading port. It has the Picatinny rail into the receiver, and we ship it with the optics. And even in the optics, the first optics we tested from different manufacturers didn't hold up. I flew over to China and I looked at how they were testing. And I said, you need to test with much stronger equipment. We got an optics that for a very reasonable price that holds up. After we taught them, said you have to test with much stronger. So today we ship Gobblers, and they have all the features the U.S. customers want, including the optics. But when you mount the optics into the receiver versus mounting on top of the receiver, when you bring the gun up, the dot is always in front of your eye. Mm-hmm. You don't have to raise your head up. You don't have to look for it. And you can take, I've worked shows, and you can take a person, small person who's 4 foot tall, and you can take a 6 foot tall person, give them the same gun, and it comes up. And you don't hunt for the optics. And that was done in competition guns. So we took the idea from 3-gun shooters and put it into production. And it's done very, very well.
Now, as far as your chokes on the Gerson shotguns, is that a proprietary
Breda mobile. I try to standardize as much as I can to something that's available for the U.S. customer. We ship with 5 choke tubes. If it's a standard production gun, it ships with 5 choke tubes of Breda mobile pattern, so they can get all the different choke tubes they want. But with 5 choke tubes, you pretty well cover what you need.
Right. Sure. Yeah, there are those out there, those that maybe use them for some shotgun sports or sporting clays that would want, you know, something that falls outside of the normal. But most of your uses, I agree. Usually the included chokes are gonna cover it.
Yeah.
And I guess the final thing with Gerson here that we can look at and talk about is, you know, we've talked about the shotguns, we've talked about the metal guns in the 1911s and the 92s, but They also produce, and then you guys deal with a Glock-ish or maybe even more of a M&P style.
It's kind of a mutt.
Polyframe, yeah.
It's kind of a mutt. It grabs a little M&P. It grabs a little different things from Glock. It's got a lot of things in it. Probably one of the best values in the market today for a striker fire. Has three grip inserts. We do the best with the gun with optics. Mm-hmm. We include the optics. And again, first optics I tested didn't hold up. I flew to China again, worked with the manufacturer. And I said to the manufacturer, I said, why are all these breaking? He says, well, no one ever told us they broke. I said, why? He says, well, we make them to be repaired. I says, wait a second. We have a reasonably priced optics, and you make it to be repaired. He says, yes. I said, well, let's forget that idea. I want you to glue everything together when you assemble it. Everything but the ability to adjust the point of impact.
Right.
Glue it all in. I said, the battery needs to be removable, and I need to be able to adjust the point of impact. The guy did that. They had to make the lens a little bit thicker. And for a very reasonable price, we ended up with an optics that we ran 5,000 rounds through on an officer and 45 ACP. And we had no failure. There isn't much out there that can do that. There, you could get charged a lot more, but it's not much of a better optics.
Right.
We shipped that gun, I think retail is 440 with the optics.
Wow.
And it ships with the optics. And the thing that we're working on now is pretty cool. The day we ship a gun with an adapter plate, just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an iron sight gun that was retrofitted in its manufacturing process to accept optics. We're changing. To me, it's wrong what we're doing today. And it's exactly kind of the same thing we did on the shotgun, where we machine the Picatinny rail into the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
On the handgun, we will introduce in 2021. We already have samples. We've tested and everything. Where the slide is cut to accept the optics. And it doesn't need an adapter plate. When you do that on a gun, the optics comes down much lower because you don't have the adapter plate. And the gun just comes up. When you bring the gun up, you're not hunting for the dot. And a lot of these guns today, you have to hunt for the dot, or you have to learn where the dot's at. But because we've lowered the mounting by getting rid of the accessory plate, it's there. The dot is exactly where you would think it should be instead of you trying to hunt for it. The other thing is you end up with much less optics failure because you're now directly mounted to the slide, so you don't end up with an adapter plate coming loose or the screws in the adapter plate coming loose or breaking, whatever.
Right.
It mounts directly. And that other thing that we did is that area that's machined on the slide handles three different optics. So you can do a vortex, you can do a trying to think of the name. It slips me. It's not the M&P. It's the. And you can do an ADE. And I got to go look at the third name. I forgot it. But it's a popular one.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you wanted something like a Trigicon or something like that, that's an adapter plate you buy from us. But out of the box, in 2021, we will ship a reasonably priced gun with a cover that has the iron sights on it. And if you don't want the optics and you want to buy your own, you'll remove that cover and there's already a machine to accept the optics, or we will ship the gun with the optics installed, our optics.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to touch us on price for that design, and it just comes up. I mean, that's the most important thing, I think, that people don't realize. Everybody, as our eyes get worse, are all going to optics. And having a gun where when you bring it up, the optics is where the dot is where you want it at, makes a big difference.
I totally agree. And so many times people will, especially those adapter plates that you talk about, you know, you'll see somebody on the range or whatever it is, and they'll throw it up and you can see they're hunting for it. They're moving it side to side and up and down, and that's not good.
Yeah, shield was the third optics.
Shield, okay.
The gun is machine, the slide is machine for it. And then if you don't want any of those three, there's an adapter plate that brings up two more. I know Trigicon's one, and I don't remember who the fourth one is.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a 2021 project. The market's so crazy right now, I don't want to add a SKU. But I think that will run very hard. And then in polymer, we have also another polymer that the first of the production guns for us to test will enter the building next week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It is probably one of the nicest feeling polymer striker fire guns that you're going to want. And we'll take that into levels of design it a little bit more for configurations for competition and so forth. But it's a very nice gun.
Okay. And what aesthetically, what does it sort of compare to as far as the look on it? Is it going to be similar to the one we're talking about?
No, it's a different animal. And it's when you hold it, it has the feeling of Campolio. You know, one of the reasons
Campolio
is so popular is it just fits your hand.
Right. Yeah. That deep cut is what I like about. I call it, and Tangfolio may even be a better. Maybe it'd be a better fit, the ones that I've shot of those, but I sort of call that a CZ cut. I don't know why. I guess just years of CZ, but and people out there that know CZ, they know what I'm talking about. But that deep cut in the top of the grip, and Tangfolio is a great one.
Yeah, and this will be a polymer with a very nice feel.
That's
and we'll do the same thing with the optics on that gun. Everything will be, and eventually that gun will be the. We'll take over our polymer line, but right now with the MC-28 gun's bulletproof, and we're selling whatever we get in, and then we, you know, with optics and the changes we are making, that gun will have a long life as well.
Right. Now, the new one you're talking about coming out, that's a Gerson as well, correct?
Gerson, yeah. They call it M9.
Okay. Okay. Now, is that something that they kind of developed the design and then you guys helped tweak, or did you guys actually have input into the design on that one?
Again, they had already had that done, and I kind of tweaked it to the U.S. taste. It still will need a little bit more before I take it to full production.
Right.
But if the next pistol that they make, then you'll see us put a lot of requirements into that pistol for the U.S. base.
Mm-hmm.
They had already done the M9 before. They had already started working on it. There are things that I would put in a pistol that you don't see. But you see them in the higher level competition.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been very successful when we bring ideas from competition into a standard configuration.
Right. Now moving on here to I'm going to butcher this, but is it the ICAR or the shotguns?
A car.
Okay. A car.
So the car has been in business in Turkey for many years. He's made for people on and off in the U.S. He never had a home. I believe he wants a home now, and we're just starting the work there. Over and unders, very nice over and unders, very nice side by sides, and we're selling pumps right now because the market's hot on pumps.
Mm-hmm.
But we will concentrate a car on small gauge semi-autos, over and unders, and side by sides. Will be his main concentration, and we'll dabble in the pump business, but it's a part of the business that is more commodity. I don't necessarily chase that area.
Right. And with, you know, one thing that I find interesting is, you know, when we talk about the manufacturers out of Turkey, and especially when we're looking at shotguns, is it almost seems like Turkey is the shotgun manufacturing capital of the world nowadays.
Well, go ahead. So you understand, a lot of what we see in the U.S. are guns that are assembled. They are truly not manufactured. So you have these people that machine parts, and then you have a lot of little guys that work out of their, almost out of the garages, assembling guns. And we get a lot of that in the United States. They don't have the quality control. They don't have a lot of things as a real manufacturer, and they're assemblers. And that's given a lot of the Turkish guns a poor name. Mm-hmm. Gersan is a true manufacturer. From womb to tomb, they manufacture.
Right. Even well, as you talked about with Gersan, and I hate to interrupt you, but you was talking earlier when we were talking about the 92, how they had those military contracts, correct? So that definitely speaks to their legitimacy, I think.
Well, I'll even take it a step further. We wanted the super sight that you see on Campolio's pistol on the 1911 from Gersan. They'd never done it. So he got a hold of a couple of the sights, and he tested them. Said, I'm not happy with them. And he went, and now he machines his own sights because he was not happy with the quality that was on the market.
Wow.
A car, I gave them some ideas, and we're still very early with a car. But you will see some over and unders that mimic some of the sought after over and unders, but we'll do better.
Right.
In semi-autos, he's small gauge. He has a very nice, he does. The thing that I really like about his semi-autos is you have three different receiver sizes. The same thing in over and unders, and the same thing in side-by-sides. When a lot of manufacturers will only produce two receivers, a car produces three. So they have three receivers, even on side-by-sides, and that's correct. And you don't see that much anymore.
Wow. And then I guess finish it up with the product line here from EAA. And again, anybody out there that's watching or listening, EAAcorp.com, you can go check out all of the specs and dirt out on this. Go ahead, Keith.
We got one more line of guns that we sell. We do very well with is the Y-Rock revolvers. And we've had those since the beginning. Mm-hmm. We call the double action the Windicator. Not the prettiest girl in the field, but it works. And we sell a fair amount of those. And then we go into the small bore and big bore single actions, and we sell a fair amount of those. And we've had Y-Rock forever.
Well, you know, I've got to disagree with you on I think that the Windicator, you know, the vent ribbed barrel, and I think it's pretty sexy. And this goes for pretty much any revolver out there. Stock grips are just, I mean, that's one of the first things for me on a revolver. You kind of got to change, right? You kind of got to find the type of wood or, you know, faux ivory or something for your grips that you want to kind of personalize that aspect. So I don't, when I'm looking at revolvers, the grips don't necessarily come into play, but as far as the frame design, like I said, and that shrouded barrel and everything, I don't know. I think they look pretty sexy. So I don't know where you get that.
It's just an indestructible. I mean, I can tell you that I work shows, you know, and even working the Harrisburg, which is, you know, what's it, 250,000 people go through there. And right. You thought you were going to have a Y-Rock in their tackle box or in their truck. It's amazing. And they say, hey, it works. And right. we saw a lot of revolvers.
Right. And then the Bounty Hunter, you said, was the single action offering.
Yep. It's a single action with a transfer bar safety, a thicker top strap, recessed chambers on the cylinder, It's got all the modern features, but still has the traditional three-click. We sell them. It works. We do 357, 44, 45 long Colt. We do the gun and case, a nickel, and blue. It has a constant sales number pretty much every year. Always growing, you know, because we're taking market share from other people, but that gun does well.
Right. And available in, I'm looking here on the site, 22 long rifle and 22 mag as well, correct?
We are the one of the few that make a full-size rimfire revolver.
Mm-hmm.
Most rimfire revolvers drop down in size.
Right.
You do the gun in 6 or 8 rounds, and it's the same size. A lot of cowboy action shooters want to practice with something where the grip is the same. This gives them the ability to practice with rimfire for the same gun, you know, they'd shoot in their centerfire.
Right. Now, on the wind indicator, a few things, a few questions I got on that. As far as the caliber, 38.357, yeah. The only caliber offering. Okay.
We do the gun 38.2. That's mm-hmm. an alloy frame. The most popular is a steel frame 38.357.
Sure.
In 2, 4, and 6, and now we do a 6-inch as well too.
Oh wow! Okay. And what is the what's the rear sights like? Are there options for the rear sights on the Windicator?
No.
No. Okay. And it's going to be is that a fixed sight?
Yes, fixed sight. Kind of it's a little dovetail. It could be updated, but you know, that gun just works, and I
sure.
Sometimes when something works and you don't have problems with it, you leave it alone.
Yep. No, I would agree with that. If it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So before we get out of here, Keith, let's talk a little bit. I mean, I think we've covered the entire product line. Goodness. And so if anybody's interest is peaked, they've definitely got the website. I'm guessing that availability is, like you say, kind of sketchy right now with the times as of the time we're recording this anyway.
We're doing pretty good. I mean, we're consuming a lot of product, but we fly everything. We don't go by water. Mm-hmm. So we have shipments coming in the building twice a week from the manufacturers.
Right. And I'm guessing all major retailers, all that good stuff. Is there a place on the site at all for them to maybe run down something that they're looking for?
In the newer version of the site, it's not mm-hmm. up yet. One of the things that in the future, a customer will be able to, from the site, say, I want this. And it will go out and behind the scenes, make it happen. It will still require that they go through the background checks and all those things
sure.
at the local gun shop, but it will make it happen so that if they cannot find it in the field, and the site will do the search for them in the field, they could end up paying us and the gun would get to a firearms dealer and their a local firearms dealer that was they selected.
Gotcha. Okay. That's going to be a very neat addition. And then finally on the different brands we've talked about, what's the warranty like if somebody was to run into an issue with one of these?
On Campolio, it's always been limited lifetime. On Y-Rock, it's limited lifetime. Gerson is limited lifetime. And Car is limited lifetime.
Okay.
Limited. Take the gun and saw it in half and put a hinge on it and screw it back together. It's not going to get covered under it.
Right.
If you say, hey, I screwed up and I did this to the gun, can you help me? A lot of times the service guys will go beyond. I've seen them where, you know, customer says, I just can't get this gun to shoot the way, you know, I want. I've seen them change top halves of guns, and I've seen them go beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get the gun to us for us to be able to help you.
Right. Now that sparks another question real quick that I've got to have on the service end of things. Is that something that's handled here in the States, or does it have to go back to the manufacturer? Or is that even something you can disclose?
100% handled in the States here.
Okay.
Parts here. Unless we're short a part or short a replacement gun, it normally is in and out of here within less than, I'm going to say 10 days. It's normally on the way back.
Right.
Sometimes it could be less. It just depends on, you know, if everybody is at SHOT Show, our service is slower than normal.
Sure.
If we're here like right now, our service is pretty good.
Right.
There are times when we fall behind because a lot of shipments in and everybody's helping. Mm. But we try to turn things around pretty quick.
Right. And yeah, speaking of SHOT Show there, I know in normal times, you guys make, you talked about the outdoor show, you've talked about SHOT Show. You guys make a lot of different shows out there. About how many shows do y'all normally in normal times make in a year?
I would say that maybe 10, 12 shows in a year that we'll hit.
Wow. That's staying busy.
I try to personally 4 or 5 shows because it's the feedback I get from the customers that mm-hmm. help us know where to go. I worked the Harrisburg show and we had just brought out the gobbler and I didn't realize that for goose hunting, a version of the gobbler, not with camouflage, but in black or with a snow pattern camo with a longer barrel would be a great goose gun. So in 2021, when I worked that show, there will be a version of that gun for goose hunters.
Nice. And that's what's great about, you know, I agree with you. And then, you know, the thing is you've got the avenue, especially with, well, like you were talking about with Gerson, with being able to give that input, you know, you've got that avenue to take that input from the consumer, the end user, and then translate that over. So in a sense, it's not that EAA or the company is getting what they want, but I mean, the consumer really is getting exactly what they want out of that firearm, which is very cool.
We try to listen and try to do what we can to bring a product. Now, if it's only one customer wants it, that's
true.
If I see something that's, you know, for example, goose hunters that wanted the optics integral to the gun when they saw it, you know, they saw the turkey version. I said, I want it for goose hunting. We're bringing out a left hand version. I didn't realize there was as many left hand people as there are. And I've been in this 30 years.
Right.
So in 2021, we will have a left hand 12 gauge semi-auto that nice. Will be in a turkey version, will be in a goose hunter's version, will be in a 3-gun version, will be left handed.
Nice. Yeah, you don't see a whole lot of left-handed shotguns out there.
And we will not bring the price crazy.
Right. Right. Charge those lefties a premium. I'm right-handed. Doesn't matter to me. So
no, we're not like that. So it'll be a few bucks extra because it's not as large of a market, but it won't be
right
like a lot of the guns that I see out there today. I mean, it's crazy what they ask for left-handed guns.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, once upon a time, if you wanted a left-handed firearm, that was custom shop. That was straight up thousands of dollars in a custom shop to get something like that done.
Yeah, we'll bring it into production, full production, and there will be left-handed. And I was surprised how many left-handed shooters there were because they were either left-handed or they were left-hand eye dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I watched them bring a gun up, and I said, I just was amazed at that in that Harrisburg area when I worked that show.
Right. Well, before we get out of here, Keith, I want to talk again about obviously the website, EAAcorp.com. There is ways to contact and all that stuff. And I'm assuming you guys are open to answering questions and that sort of thing. As far as the website, as far as other social media that folks can kind of follow along and check out the EAA products and everything. Give you just a second to talk about that if you'd like to.
I'm not the best one. for social media. I have someone that does it.
Right.
I know that we're on all the different platforms, but I'm not the guy on that one.
Gotcha. So just what you're telling everybody is go to that platform and do a search for EAA, and there you'll be. So
you'll see we're on all of them, and we do all of it. If we work a show, there's always pictures from the shows. If you write in, I know that they post pictures of people's guns.
Oh, nice.
If they've been hunting turkeys, there's pictures of people, you know, that are from hunting. But I don't follow that. I don't even have a Facebook account.
Not my thing. You know what? You're the boss. You can delegate authority. It's all good. Well, Keith, I appreciate you coming in and joining us this week. And you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.